Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Jamie. Welcome to the show, Jamie. How are you doing?
Yes, Simon. Really good, thank you. Yeah, it's been a busy old day.
Been a busy day.
And we're all tired because it was a late night last night after the football. So luckily we all managed to get up on time and send the kids off to school.
And you had a trip out last week to a fun fair to Alton Towers.
How was that? Alton Towers. Oh yes, yeah, Alton Towers last week. You know what? We've done two theme parks already since they started to lift the restrictions. And Lyle had his first school trip with his new school friends, which was really good because you might not know this, but we actually moved house to a new city about 2 months ago. So the kids really have been settling in, you know, to their new schools, making new friends. Alton Towers school trip was exciting.
I heard you on Joy's podcast.
Yes.
And you were talking about the move. You were talking about the move then, and you were talking about getting the kids involved in the move and making it like an adventure. And I just thought, this is
it made us nervous because, of course, adopted kids have suffered trauma and lots of various house moves, often with foster carers and things like that. So we were conscious to Tom and I wanted to make the move a positive experience for them, because in the past all their moves around various houses and with different families have always been quite uncomfortable and disorientating. So basically, yeah, we decided really early on in the process of being house that we'd get the boys really involved. So they came to look around houses with us, and we basically had them with us at every stage of the whole thing. And of course, moving house as well, it's just so enormously stressful and complicated and uncertain. Actually, having the boys invested and excited about the move helped us as well.
And did I? Because it was a couple of months ago that I listened to the podcast, and probably a few months before, you know, since you had recorded it. So, did you get them involved in the decoration for the bedrooms or something like that? Did I hear talk about that, or is my memory playing tricks on me?
Well, they decided which bedrooms they would like when we first looked around this house that we now live in. So they chose their bedrooms, and then basically we set them off on the internet to research various styles, colours, and furniture, because we're basically upgrading all their furniture and stuff now. They're getting a bit bigger. So that's been really nice. But, you know, the best thing about involving the kids in the actual process of moving house was that they were so excited when we finally got here, that any kind of nerves they had about having to go into their new classrooms and things like that, we'd already processed all that in their minds. So they were really well prepared.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So, because you were city centre before, where you were in an urban and you wanted to get out to the country, I think that was from what I
heard. Yes, we used to live in Leicester and we were city centre based, but we really missed the, basically we're a countryside family. We love going out for walks, we love country pubs and going on our bikes. And Tom's family live in Sheffield, or greater sort of Sheffield area. So we already know the countryside and we love it, basically. South Yorkshire is just totally beautiful and the people are really, really lovely. And also, house prices are less up here. So we were able to effectively swap our little house that we'd grown out of for a lovely big house without taking on too much more, debt and financial concern. So it's been a really, really amazing move for us. Like, it's probably, after adopting the kids, the best thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
It's enabled Tom to come back from his stressful job a little bit and help me with the daddy and dad stuff. And we've already made new friends and explored the countryside. We're right next to a huge country park called Rother Valley Country Park, which is like a country park surrounding these great big lakes with water sports and things like that. So the kids have been doing all the water sports and the inflatable stuff over there. They've got sort of one of these great big inflatable aqua park things on the lake there.
Right.
So, I mean, all this is all within about 5 minutes walk from our house. So we're still fairly close to the city centre. So Sheffield itself is about 25 minutes on the tram.
Right.
Which is quite exciting as an excursion on its own, because getting the tram and all the new buildings and architecture and stuff to explore, it is really exciting. We love it.
Yeah, superb. So tell us, share us, it's obviously the second step in the adoption adventure. So take us back to the start and becoming adopted parents.
Yeah, so Tom and I had been a couple for about 10 years when we started talking about starting a family of our own. And we settled on adoption in really just after a few days of research, of researching our options, because we liked the idea that we could adopt siblings together.
Yeah.
At the same time. We had experience looking after our little nephews at the time, who were 3 and 4 or ish, and they would come and stay with us at weekends. So we knew that kind of dynamic with two children might work quite well for us. And then looking into the kind of kids that were waiting for families, we learned that there were a lot of sibling groups that they were struggling to find parents for. So that was really our decision made quite early on, that we would go into this process with hopefully with the result of adopting two children at once,
yeah,
or more, two or more children.
Yeah. And how long ago was this?
This was in 2011 or 12.
Right, okay.
So the process back then was actually a little bit longer and drawn out than it is now. And there were some administrative delays, which meant that it took us about 2 years to go from sort of the initial inquiry through to the boys moving in with us, which even back then, when it took a bit longer to adopt children, that was still a really long time. And particularly the stage of the process where the local authority and the social workers prepare the kids to move in with you, that was extremely drawn out, and there were several issues that we experienced. But generally, the adoption process was quite a positive experience for Tom and I. We found it quite therapeutic to talk to a sort of to a social worker about our relationship and finance and the sort of family dynamic we have at home and our sort of lives. Lots of stuff came out of the woodwork that Tom and I had never even thought about speaking about before. So it was like we really got to know each other a little bit better. And we had a really good relationship with our social worker. She was really fantastic, called Michelle. She was from Adoption Focus, which is an adoption charity in the Midlands.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was just so well organised. And of course, because the adoption process is a bit like moving house, it's quite convoluted and complex. To have somebody that well organised sort of driving the whole thing was just magical for us. We really thought she was fantastic. The adoption process itself, besides a few administrative hurdles, was fairly straightforward. The assessment was therapeutic and quite rewarding in a lot of ways. And then, of course, selecting children, that's quite heartbreaking, to be fair, because you're presented with all these profiles of all these gorgeous little kids and their sort of backstories. During the process of family finding, we looked at 3 or 4 different sibling groups. And then finally, Lionel Richard's little profile arrived in my emails one morning. And I quickly pinged over a WhatsApp to Tom saying, oh, I like these two. These look like they sort of already looked a little bit like part of our family somehow. And we just sort of fell in love with them based on just a little picture and a quick story. But we knew from reading their profiles that we were going to have some challenging times ahead, because they'd been moved around so much and they were only tiny still. But we committed to them, and after that was just sort of history made. And like I said, then the final part of the process where we were preparing to have the boys went on and on a bit too long. And we were never quite certain whether the social worker would phone me on a Friday and say, right, Monday, all go, all systems go, you're going to meet your kids for the first time. It was like we didn't really know when it was all going to happen. So just like that, on a Friday at work, I was sort of like ready to go on adoption leave. So my work had no idea how long I'd be there still. I was just doing little bit admin bits, really, for them at the end. And the social worker said, right, that's it. Now, Monday, you're going to meet the boys.
Brilliant.
And of course, meeting them for the first time was totally surreal and really wonderful. We met them at their foster care setting, and where we've been a few times, but we've never actually met the boys there before. So we already knew the house well, and we already knew their foster carers. But of course, it was still nerve-wracking meeting boys because we just didn't know how they would respond to us. But we gelled together very quickly. And the part of the adoption process called introductions, where you meet your children for slightly longer each day in their foster care setting, and you start to get involved in their routine and bathing and school runs and stuff. It's so clever how it's planned, and it works really well. So by the end of the 2 weeks, when we were spending a little bit more time with Lyle and Richard each day, they were completely comfortable with us, you know. And then on the final day, we went to their foster home, and they had all their little bags packed. Wow. And we packed them all into the back of the car and set off along the M1. And we all felt a little bit homesick in a strange way for the first week or two. The kids sort of struggled to go to sleep at night because they were missing their foster parents so much. But we just gelled as a family really, really fast. And I just think that's testament to the social workers and their clever matching. So, you know, we would say we've had a very positive, successful adoption experience. I mean, touch wood, obviously, because we're only kind of a few years in, even though we've had the boys 8 years now. The teenage years are promised to be quite complicated, I expect. And that's from other people talking to me about their teenage children.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We'll get into that. Are people, because it's really tricky to we're just individuals, aren't we? We're all human. But this, you know, I hear this for adoptive parents, you know, is this an adoption issue? Is this just a kid issue? You know, and then people warning of trouble ahead. And are like, you know, to me, it's like when I was a kid, when we were kids, we used to play Murder in the Dark. And like the thought of it, you know, you go into a room and you're waiting for somebody to pound on you. And it's just like, that's horrible. Horrible. And then people say about adoption, well, it's going to be worse. It's going to be worse. You know, it could be tricky in the teenage years. And it's just like, are they trying to get me worried about this now? You know, why do they feel that
it is a funny one, isn't it? But basically I was just saying that really with a sort of pinch of salt.
Cool.
Because they're lovely kids, and I'm just sure that and they're polite and lovely and kind to other people, so I just fingers crossed it'll all be sort of smooth. Okay. Plain sailing. But it is really difficult, isn't it, to determine what might be an adoption-related issue, and not just an issue that all children experience. So we just tend to just take things one at a time, you know, as issues crop up. We sort of team up together and try and solve it. I'm not even sure it's that important where the issue stems from, if you're sort of
on top of it. Right. I think you're right. I think it doesn't matter. And I think sending like, so me and my wife haven't got any kids, right? We've got two Labradors. So what, everybody's got dogs, but we've also got two pigs.
Yeah.
Ruby and Buster. Makes us a little bit different. I used to do a lot of work in schools, and I'd show the kids the pictures of the pigs, and they'd be fascinated. But anyway, that's the aside. So I'm not a parenting expert, right? You know, I know a lot about adoption from my own lived experience, but I am not an adoptive parent or even a parent. So I don't give out parenting. I try not to do it and give out any advice, and definitely not parenting advice. It's impossible, and it doesn't matter what the cause of the issue is. It's like what we're going to do, you know, what we're going to do about it, isn't it? I mean, and I also think that if we, I'm speaking from personal experience here, right? If like what I did, the stuff that was going on in my head, I tethered it to adoption, right? And if you tether, the mind is a meaning-making machine. It's looking for a reason, And when it's got a reason, oh, we've got a reason. It's like, check the box, tick the box. Okay, adoption related. So stuff that went on in my mind that I tethered, I attributed, however the way you say it, to adoption, means it's like, well, the word tether, I'm thinking of like a balloon, a hot air balloon, right?
Yeah.
That's tethered. It's on a rope and it's tethered to a stake, then that balloon can't rise because it's saying this is related to adoption and you can't go back 50 years and undo you're stuck with it. And it's not very empowering.
No. And it's giving a negative, it's like an unnecessary negativity, isn't it?
It is.
So with us, when the kids have experienced issues or problems, we tend not to consider it, or even we just tend not to overanalyze it too much.
Yes.
You know, like for instance, when the kids first joined us, Richard couldn't talk. He hadn't had any kind of he was just a little bit behind in his development, speech development. And you know, rather than trying to look for the source of the issue, which would probably have overturned quite a few sort of nasty things that we might not at that age need to be thinking about. We just got on it ourselves and went through some speech therapy with him. And it was really positive and successful, but really hard work. But I just think if we'd overanalyzed the root causes of his delay, we'd have all become quite upset about it. And it would have become a thing, you know, rather than just a little challenge to overcome.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we go through things like that.
Yeah. And there's a big, that you kind of like, you figured that out, right? Along the way. And I'm just going to stop you and talk about that, because if we make things a thing, they get bigger.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. We substantiate it, you know? We say, oh, this is an issue. And then all these people, I keep on talking to adopted parents, right? And they say, well, actually, I take what other people say with a pinch of salt. You said pinch of salt, didn't you?
Yeah.
Or I take people with a pinch of salt, or I completely ignore them.
Yeah.
Because, I know that they have to warn me. You know, scientists don't get sacked for being too pessimistic. You know, at the moment we're dealing with COVID. The scientists have still got their job, even if they present, if they talk about Armageddon, they've still got a job. Whereas if Boris came on and talked about Armageddon, then he'd be out of a job, wouldn't he? And he'd send the whole country down that Armageddon hole in him. Now, I'm not a fan of Boris, I think he's been a bit over optimistic, but back to adoption, right? If we make stuff a thing, it becomes a thing. And if we've made it a thing, then it becomes a thing in our kids' lives. And it becomes a thing in their lives, then the thing gets bigger and gets scarier and it gets darker. And before we know it.
That's not to say that if any very difficult challenges face us within the next few years while the kids are still growing up, that's not to say we wouldn't take it seriously and get help.
No.
But it's just more the fact that we would need to head into these issues with a positive outlook, you know, rather than getting a headache and upset about stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, we're expecting some issues.
Yeah.
And when they sort of raise their head, we'll just talk about it and find a solution without, like you say, without focusing too much on the root cause or creating a big issue out of anything.
Or overanalyzing it, as you say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know, we've got busy lives and we're all trying to work our way through the everyday as well. So, you know.
So what comes to your mind When I say these words, thriving adoptees, what does that mean to you, Jamie?
Thriving adoptees. Well, in the literal sense of the word, it would suggest to me that adopted children are in a successful placement and they feel loved and protected. And when we've come up against any kind of scrutiny or negativity online, you know, because we're an influencer family, so we do have comments and trolls and people like that who pop up on our comments and things every so often, suggesting that the kids are somehow sort of not in danger, but that they should be with a mum and dad, or they've got something horrible to say about the fact we're two dads with kids, or the anti-adoption. And my response is always, you know, when we look at the boys and how happy they are thriving. And so, you know, scrutiny like that just falls on completely deaf ears, because I can look into the living room and see two happy little boys with two parents that love them. And so, you know, thriving adoptees have loving families, don't they?
Yeah.
And they're given all these opportunities that they wouldn't have had previously as well, you know, had the outcome been different for them.
Yeah. So did you say eight years?
Yeah, well, we adopted them coming up to 8 years ago.
Yeah.
When they were just 4 and 5. Of course, they're huge now. They're 11 and 12.
Yeah.
Particularly Lyle, he's sort of like a little mini teenager, really, ever since secondary school.
Yeah.
Cool as a cucumber. And sort of he's quite independent, gets the bus to school and back on his own, and hangs out with his friends.
Yeah.
Whereas Richard's 11, so they're almost the same age, to be honest. They look like twins.
Yeah.
But he's that little bit behind in terms of, like, he's still at primary school and still quite boisterous and cuddly and naughty. And I look at them and think they're thriving. It's just the perfect word.
So what would you like to share in terms of what you've learned to help those two little fellas thrive?
Well, I mentioned earlier, didn't I, that our social worker from Adoption Focus was really well organised and fantastic, but she also prepared us with parenting strategies, which was a little kind of over and beyond what she was there to do, really. But one of the things that she really prepared us for was the fact that the kids are such creatures of routine. So even before they moved in, we decided that we would be quite, what's the word, not robotic, but we were going to put a real strict routine in place and then stick to it, to enable the kids to just to make everything predictable for them and to help them settle in. And, you know, it worked so incredibly well, for instance. And also, when you adopt children, you've got this kind of opportunity to have a bit of a fresh start with them as well.
Yeah.
So any bad habits, late nights, kind of issues like that that they previously had, you can nip them in the bud. And working as a team as well with the boys, they feel invested as well. So, for instance, the routine then, we'd have it on our fridge, actually printed out, in all these lovely different bright fonts. And it was sort of like 7 o'clock, getting up time, 7:30, shower, then, you know, cuddle, reading, everything went on this routine plan. And it sounds a little bit overboard, to be honest, now thinking back, but it was just really nice. And the kids were able to help us put it together as well. So we got them involved with choosing their own alarm clocks for their bedrooms, which meant that they then were invested in sort of the sleep routine. And we've never, ever had a single problem with them getting up in the middle of the night. Ah, I'll tell a lie, apart from once when we found Lyle raiding the biscuit tin downstairs. But apart from that, they sleep really well and on time as well. So they always get up themselves at sort of 7:30. And that's been a real, I mean, that's something we learned really early on and we still go back to. And whenever I'm asked on any kind of recording or interview what my biggest bit of advice is for new parents, adopted or not, is just get this routine going and stick to it as much as you possibly can, because it just helps kids feel sort of at home and predictable and it sets like a healthy pattern. Yeah. So that was really fantastic advice that our social worker passed to us.
Yeah.
And the more we sort of involve the kids, even now in routine, even things like knowing what's coming up in the next few days, you know, it just helps. They seem a little bit more happy and comfortable.
Yeah.
If we throw things in too often that are unpredictable, the whole family now seems to go off a bit kind of wonky. So we tend to be quite methodical and planned.
Yeah.
Planning our trips and what we're doing at the weekend, that kind of thing.
The chief exec of Adoption Focus, Anna Sharkey, yeah. She was one of the first people on the podcast, actually. So
was she? Oh, she's lovely. Hi, Anna, if you're listening.
Yeah, yeah. So when we put it out on social, I'll be sure to tag them in. You've name checked Michelle as being a great.
She doesn't live there anymore, unfortunately, but. Choosing Adoption Focus as the charity rather than going through the local authority was probably one of the best decisions we made early on in the adoption in our new life, because they're just really well organized and well funded, and it's a nice community as well. They put on little events, and I was on the panel as well there for about 18 months after I adopted as one of their independent panelists. And I just found the whole place just really welcoming. It was like a big family. And all the social workers and staff there are just so hardworking and really committed to the cause as well. So it was just, that's another piece of advice that I would happily offer anybody thinking about adopting or even inquiring into adoption or wanting to ask any questions, is certainly look for your local adoption agency, because they're just so clever and well-funded and well run and friendly. Yeah. So I think I can't say I haven't got any huge experience about local authorities, but the trouble is if they're concentrating on lots and lots of different departments and problems and issues, adoption isn't their number one focus, whereas using a charity or an adoption agency to adopt, it's their full focus. And yeah. And so, yeah, I just thought that they were fantastic.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to think what else I could tell, what other suggestions I have, because of course we've talked about routine and that seems to infiltrate almost every little part of our lives. But one problem that we experienced that was a bit of a shock to begin with, and this, I don't think it is adoption related so much, more kind of just general parenting. But one thing I really struggled with to begin with, and still now, is that the fact that I'd never really been angry before. So like I'd gone through like my first 30 years without ever really having a big argument with anybody. And then suddenly when the boys landed and moved in with us, they were fighting right from the first day one, you know, because they're brothers and they're really close in age and very competitive. And I found it really difficult. I didn't know how to be angry. You know how to sort of like, as a parent, involve myself in a situation to try and resolve like a fight or conflict between the boys. That wasn't something I was prepared for. And I remember saying to Tom, I really don't know how to be angry and kind of sort a situation out at the same time. So I found myself being really frustrated and wound up with boys because they were just fighting the whole time. And they were with me as well permanently during adoption leave for about 8 months. So having this constant noise and fighting and squabbling all the time, right? And of course, they also, when you adopt and you're building that kind of bond and attachment, the kids are physically all around you all the time. You know, you don't really have any privacy. So I struggled with that. And so I decided one strategy might be to just sit back and allow it to all wash over me, which lasted, I tried that for about 2 weeks. So just not getting involved when they were fighting or bashing each other or hiding each other's stuff or whatever. And that actually worked quite nicely for a couple of weeks, but it didn't seem to be solving the fact that they were just sort of squabbling all the time. So the problem was still there. And in the end, what Tom and I ended up having to do was just literally take turns being the angry parent rather than just always being kind of me getting involved and having to separate them out and naughty step and naughty corner, etc. Tom and I would sort of, it was unofficial, but I'd say, "Oh, Tom, it's your turn to sort the boys out." And yeah, nothing really prepared me for how difficult managing kids' behaviour is. And I hadn't even given it any, not even a second's thought, because the kids were so well behaved during our introductions with them that it hadn't even crossed my mind that this would be a thing. And it still is. Like, they just, if they're not playing on computer games on the PS4, they just fight permanently. And I think as they get a bit older, I think once they're both into secondary school, they'll hopefully start colluding and getting on. But yeah, adopting siblings is hard work if they squabble.
Yeah.
Permanently, which mine do. They're very good, by the way, like out and about. So if I take them to a restaurant or the pub or sort of to any kind of event or, you know, the cinema or anything like that, or on the bus, generally speaking, they are really, really fantastically well behaved. It's just when we're at home and perhaps when there's not as much there to distract them. So, you know, you do, I think heading into adoption, you do have to be realistic with the fact that it's going to be really hard work on so many different levels, but the kids' bad behaviour is definitely an issue that might not have crossed your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd look at our kids on Instagram or wherever, and you probably think they look like angels most of the time, but that's just a nice little snapshot of a moment of our day usually.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're, you know, somebody told me about social media, not in relating to adoption, but it says, you know, what's happening is most of the time we're comparing our insides with other people's outsides.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah. You know, and then when we're seeing that comparison and it's not stacking up, and then you know, like comparison is a tricky thing in any setting, isn't it? You know, like we start thinking, well, what's, you know, what am I doing wrong? Or, you know, like, but everybody else, when everybody else is dealing with the same stuff, they're just not going public about it, are they?
Yeah. Well, we just try and, because, well, I guess it all started with a blog. So the Daddy and Dad blog is a well-known adoption blog, basically, where we talk about all our feelings and issues and everything that happened basically after we started the adoption process. And then Instagram, and that was quite gritty and real. So I didn't have put any filters on anything. And when I'm talking about adoption and the kids, like I always say I never shy away from like the nosebleeds and the and sort of sleepless nights and the fighting and all that stuff, which appeals to people, because I think there is like all these other parent blogs are very filtered and almost look a bit too perfect and fluffy. Whereas ours is kind of dark and gritty and fun and funny. And so Instagram really, I set that up as like a bit of a spin-off, because I was putting all these photographs and stuff of our days out on the blog, and the website was slowing down because I'd taken so many pictures. So somebody suggested to me that Instagram would be a nice place for it, for all our photographs and things. And it took off, and I think it's because we're quite real on there. But we are full of smiles still. So I guess it can look a little bit like we are permanently happy, when obviously we're not in real life. But it's just because we're kind of taking a picture of a snapshot of a day where we're all happy and doing something exciting usually. But yeah, I try not to compare myself with other families, even other families that look like ours, because what you're seeing is just what's happened in front of the camera for that second. You don't see all the mess behind them, all the equipment, washing all strewn all over the place, and or sort of the garden looking messy. You just see a little corner, don't you, that looks really perfect.
Yeah.
And it's not real.
It's not.
And real. I know that because ours isn't real. When you see a sort of picture of us all sat on a settee in the garden, you can almost guarantee behind us there's sort of a load of crap all over the lawn.
Although,
a pile of washing up that needs doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess actually being an influencer on Instagram helps in some terms with the problem of comparing yourself, because I know firsthand what is real and what isn't. And I can look at any influencer family's photographs and I can just, I just think, well, that's obviously they've just moved all their junk into another corner to take that picture.
Yeah. We have to see these things for ourselves, don't we? You know, like often. Yeah.
I actually think though, sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. I think while I'm thinking about it, that whole concept of like comparing yourself to other people that are similar to you, that also extends into real life, doesn't it? And when you adopt, it's really, really, it's too easy to compare yourself with other families who have been together since birth and seem to be really winging it all the time and winning at life. Because when you adopt, you've got all these issues and challenges to overcome. It's really, really important not to look at other families with kids the same age and compare yourself with them. And that becomes quite hard, actually, when you start school with the kids, when the kids start school, because you're suddenly faced with all these other families and parents who all seem to have an answer to the problems. But the answers to their problems aren't usually applicable to adopted kids. Do you see what I mean? So it was just, I remember thinking, oh, particularly when, and also people are quite nosy and like to give you their feedback. So like you said earlier, I think you mentioned that you sort of have to almost totally ignore other people's advice and parenting sort of support. And it is exactly like that when you adopt, because you find so much, you get so much feedback from other family members and other people's parents. And it's usually quite negative, because also when you adopt, almost every parenting decision you make is really deliberate and usually kind of thought through with a social worker or as a couple or whatever. You don't really leave anything to chance. And so basically other people looking in might think you look like you're being really strict or sort of overthinking something, when actually you're deliberately parenting them like that. And we had a couple of issues in the early sort of years where members of our family got quite upset about the fact that we looked from the outside looking in as though we were far too strict with the boys. But actually we were just sticking to a really firm routine and sort of not really allowing them to cross too many boundaries. I've probably gone completely off topic now, but still.
No, not at all. No, this is fascinating. This is fascinating stuff. This is the stuff that matters. I say, me and my wife haven't got any kids, so this is the stuff that matters. But every child is different. I was talking to recording a podcast last week, and this little boy had been placed. So that I was talking to it was an adoptive dad, but he'd fostered this little boy. Him and his wife had fostered this little boy. Then the boy had gone off into it be adopted, and it had fallen through, and it'd come back.
Oh God!
And fostered him again.
Yeah.
And then he'd come to live with him because it's on another episode. But he was saying that he had to actually just really go with the child, really allow the child. But, you know, to me, it sounded less strict, you know, for want of a better word, than what you've described. So every child's different. And also, like, every version of strict is different, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, one person's strict. And the other thing that I... So, you know, you've got to do what's right for your child, and you've got... You know them best. And what's wrong with putting a bit more thought into parenting? You know, shouldn't we be making a few more decisions ahead of time? And shouldn't we be thinking, you know, shouldn't we all be putting a little bit more thought into most of our life in the future, rather than moaning about the past like most people do? You know, let's put a bit more time into thinking about what we're going to do next. You know, seems like a good idea to me. The other thing is that I've heard is that I'm in my 50s, right? We've got some friends who are becoming one particular, who are becoming grandparents or have become grandparents, and the fighting that goes on between the or the, you know, everybody thinks that they know better.
Yeah, so you've got
grandparents and telling their kids how to parent their kids.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's just like this is families. This isn't adoption. You know,
the difficulty there. I mean, I found the solution to that problem, which we do experience that with my parents, is just to make sure that you're not in a captive with them for too long.
Great work.
One example of this in action, and I look back and I really regret it now, and I would have planned it completely differently had I known how horrendous it would be, is we all went to Centre Parks and shared a single lodge. Me, my children, my mum and dad, and my sister and her husband. And my kids were fighting like they always do. But also, on top of that, whenever they're with my parents, A, they get away with a lot more. And so then they sort of capitalize on that and they really take advantage. And B, they just eat whatever they like, which is something that never happens here. And I really struggle to adjust to that. So in this captive little cabin, and it was peeing with rain as well the whole time, so we're all stuck in this tiny little room, I would go to my bedroom and I could hear the kids raiding the kitchen, and my dad sort of like encouraging them to get, you know, croissants out and all sorts. I was finding food under their pillows. It was all a little bit nuts.
Yeah.
And my parents really can't stand it at all when I tell the kids off. It's just not, I think it just really grates on them. But I have to, because the kids will be outside fighting. I mean, at one point, it looked like they were going to whack each other in the head with the scooter. I'd bang on the window, "Oi, boys, stop it now," you know, sort of thing. And my parents would then be really, really upset with me for like, there was a whole like atmosphere for hours after each time. And it got to the stage in the end where I literally felt like I should pack my bags and go. But, you know, so basically the solution to that, I think, because I love my parents and they are really lovely with the kids as well, is that I just need to plan accommodation better when we're all together, so that, you know, if I'd been in the next cabin alone and had a little bit of extra space, I'd have been able to escape and kind of ignore what's going on. Or I could have taken the kids out of the situation and sort of tried to regain a bit of routine back. Because at the end of the day, that's what happens. The routine goes out the window.
So it's the learning curve, isn't it? It's the learning curve.
Yeah.
And however much thought we're going to give into what we're going to do next, we might end up overthinking stuff, but we're never gonna have all the answers ahead of time, are we?
No.
Yeah.
That was unpredictable, that one.
Yeah.
Which does give me the gift of hindsight now, though, luckily for next time.
Yeah. You said that before you adopted the boys, it was you said it was very therapeutic. It brought you and Tom closer together, a better understanding of one another, and stuff like that. How have you? I'm not sure what the question is. How's that process continued as you know, you've grown into everything over the last 8 years?
I'd probably describe our relationship over the last 8 years as a bit of a roller coaster. There's been huge ups and huge downs. It's extremely challenging. It has been extremely challenging for Tom, particularly, taking on all the responsibility for earning money over the last, at least the last 7 years or so. So he's been a director in a tech firm down south for about the last 6 or 7 years, and it's really quite stressful and involves a lot of travel, long hours, and loads of pressure from a sales perspective. And he's just now setting on a new journey where hopefully he's going to do something a little bit more practical. But basically, he felt this kind of huge pressure to look after everybody financially. And that was really difficult for him. Meanwhile, of course, the dynamic of our relationship completely changed, because I was off work, I was actually made redundant after returning part-time to work. So I was just like with the kids all the time, and they're sort of primary carer. I think that's the sort of politically correct term for it.
Yeah, I don't care much about political correctness. So if that's the wrong term, I don't care.
The difficulty there was that we were like passing ships. Is that the phrase? You know, we hardly ever really saw each other. And we were, when we were together, we were just knackered or asleep. And Tom, I think, would have felt quite jealous towards my time I'm getting to spend with the kids. On the other hand, I was just angry all the time with the kids fighting, and quite jealous of the fact that Tom was going off traveling all over the world with his job, whereas I felt quite isolated at home on my own. Luckily, the blogging sort of addressed that in some ways, because it gave me a bit of purpose, and sort of I was able to meet and network with other parents and stuff through that, which got me through. So, the mortgage was expensive. We were living in a house that was gradually becoming way too small as well for us. So Tom and I have struggled as a couple. You also, when you become parents, you completely say goodbye to any privacy. So basically we find it really difficult to find a single moment to be intimate anymore. Cause so that's like quite something we've had to sort of cope with and go through. We've never ever appreciated a weekend in a hotel room without the boys more than we do now. Because, you know, it's just so difficult to, I mean, kids just don't knock on doors. So, you know, there's no privacy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that aside, we are basically making changes to our life now that we can afford it. My daddy and dad business is going well. So the idea now with this house move is to be closer to countryside and closer to family and sort of healthy activities, because we were spending far too much time at the pub in the city in Leicester, and just we were becoming less and less healthy. So that's one excellent immediate change and improvement to our lifestyle living here, you know, and we've got so much more space, which leads to us having more privacy as well. And, you know, the kids are doing really well at the new house. And Tom's just at the door. He's going, it's dinner time.
It is, yeah, yeah. Me too. Yeah.
this house move financially is going to enable us to become much more equal in terms of bringing money in and childcare and all that kind of thing. It's just a lot more fair and equal, which is going to be a real good thing for Tom and I as a couple.
Yeah.
You know, and also now the kids are a little bit older, it does allow us all more independence, you know, because we don't necessarily need to be with them the whole time. They can go off to activities and things on their own, and they can cycle around and go to the shops or do whatever they like, really, in the immediate village that we're in, because it's quite a nice, safe little place to live.
Yeah.
Tom and I, the adoption process itself was therapeutic, but we have struggled over the last 8 years, and I think actually lockdown as well has just been awful for everybody, because you're kind of captive together in like a sort of prison, aren't you? Luckily we had a back garden we could sit in last year because it was nice and warm, but we were sort of cooped up in that tiny house. I look back and I can't actually imagine how we survived it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you'd also from a routine perspective, you know, when the routine changed when we went into lockdown.
Yeah,
that must have. I guess did you adapt the routine pretty quickly?
Because we made some mistakes. Basically, when the kids first started homeschooling, or however you describe the schooling that they were doing on their laptops, Tom and I basically headed into it way too enthusiastically, and we were sort of doing all these different activities. The kids were reading. It was like it was pretty bonkers because we were trying to work from home full time as well. And we basically managed to sort of get through all of our ideas and activities and stuff within the first sort of week and a half, 2 weeks. And so basically we just completely slowed down, a bit like when you go on holiday, you know, and you start walking half the speed everywhere. That was our lockdown. We basically slowed everything down. We sat on deck chairs and sort of we just took our time over everything. The kids did a lot of slow activities, reading, writing letters to people, and playing. We were a little bit more flexible with computer games and phones and stuff as well. But yeah, it was a bit of a culture shock for us to have to slow down. And that actually became, because you start to get into the swing of it eventually, don't you? And it all feels a little bit too slow, you know, when you start slowing your routine down. But actually, after about a month or two, we were quite comfortable with it. And then, of course, then we moved house and the kids have gone straight back to school full time. And we're all kind of adjusting back to the ordinary speed of life again.
Yeah.
We were getting up late, going to bed late. Their schoolwork was flexible, so they didn't have to do it 9 till 3. So they were set sort of signing in at about 10 in the morning and logging off at 4 and taking breaks outside to play on their bikes. You know, it was nice, actually. But we were cooped up. I think what we should have done is moved to this house before lockdown.
Yeah.
But of course, we didn't know back then that it was going to happen.
No, it was going to happen. Fantastic. Well, it's been an incredible insight. Yeah, incredible. So the routine and flexing with it and the miss and learning from the mistakes and not overthinking, I guess.
Yeah, so it's all a bit contradictory. No. But basically, I guess, like, being prepared with a routine addresses a lot of other problems along the way. So that's big good advice, I would say, to anybody. But like you say, other kids might prefer a kind of zero routine approach where you just kind of allow them to get on with stuff whenever they like. That wouldn't work for us. Yeah. And not least, I think with two children at once, you really need to be quite prepared and planned, but not overthinking problems. I think that's what I was really getting at. Yeah. And not being too hard on yourself, because, like, it is hard work. And not comparing, try not to compare yourself with other people too much.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for sharing so much with us, Jamie. It's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I'll leave you to get on and enjoy your evening meal.
Would you mind if I, Simon, just mention where people can find me?
Of course. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned it in passing, but please, yeah, mention it again. And I'll put links, obviously, in the show notes. People are driving. You don't need to try and pull over and remember this. You know, it'll be linked. So please, yeah.
So yeah, the blog is daddyanddad.co.uk, and you can just Google Daddy and Dad and that'll pop up as the top result. We're also on Instagram and Facebook as Daddy and Dad. That's the handle. And we're on Twitter as Daddy and Dad Blog, because Daddy and Dad had already been taken by somebody else. That was a bit annoying. So Daddy and Dad Blog on Twitter. So, and then I'm also going to link to this podcast and all the other several podcasts about adoption and parenting that I've done during lockdown on the blog as well. So if you enjoyed listening to Simon and I chatting, then there's a variety of other podcasts that you'll find me on as well.
That's great. So I'll put all those links in there in the show notes, and look forward to speaking to you again soon. Thanks a lot for coming on and sharing your insights.
Absolutely no problem at all. Bye.